right. Well, welcome to yet another episode of Flip Your Friday. Casey, we decided to do it. We decided to rebrand. I don't know how I feel about it, but I think it's the right decision. We can talk about it a little later. For now, I'm your host, Wynn Silberman. This is my co-host, Casey LeBlanc. And I'm really excited to have JD. I'm going to call you the mattress flipper, if you don't mind.
The sleep whisperer.
Yeah, I like the slip. Yeah, I like that too. Sleep whisperer is really, really cool.
Yeah, we got to dive into some of this stuff immediately.
Yeah, it's going to be.
Yeah, there's a lot here with that already.
I'm really intrigued about this. Really excited for you to be here. Thank you. But JD, you know, we would like to do just real briefly, Case, just a little bit of an origin for us as to why you're here, what this podcast is about. And then let's just jump right into it. But Case, I love it when you just do a little bit of a version of what we do.
So again, we've talked about this. It's about what you're doing that has separated yourself to get you to a level that some people are striving to be. So trying to pick tips and tricks and different things of whether it's going through something and how you rebound it, or whether it's, you know, a routine. But basically the idea of Friday being considered a third day of the weekend, especially in San Diego. What are you doing that's different that either elite people or people that are considering doing some changes in their routines can glean from your experiences? So that's kind of the origin of it. And you know, starting from that, we'd love to kind of give the audience, anyone who doesn't know you, and if you're in San Diego, probably not that many people, but people that don't know you, give us a little bit of background, kind of where you started, where you came, you know, where you came from. Give us some
origin.
Some...
Origin is important, you know. Oh, yeah. So give us a little background.
The backstory is everything.
Yeah, I think it is.
It is.
I think it is.
We can dig out some gold in there, you know, in everybody's story. So how far back you want to go here?
Well, so you're from New Jersey.
Yeah, been on the planet for quite a long time, 51 years.
So let's start New Jersey.
Okay, Jersey, born and raised, single mom. Dad was completely not present at all, like literally never touched me, never changed a diaper. Luckily, my mom is stronger than probably 90% of men. Mm-hmm. So she raised me solo and she took the role of both mother and father. And I'm saying, luckily, I'm blessed to have a mother.
Were you an only child?
I was. Correct. Okay. Yep.
Wow.
So only child. And luckily, I had a mom that strong. Otherwise, who knows what would have happened? Because I, you know, when I interview people on my podcast, everybody's childhood, I haven't had I've only had one out of like 20 that had a great harmonious childhood. So it's very rare.
Well if you don't mind, define strong for me in the context of especially a feminine context, right? Yeah. Because often in this culture, we're trying to grow into that and recognize the power of females, right? I mean, that's a very, very big deal. But what do you mean by your mother was strong? What does that mean? Give me an example.
So she instilled in me very, very early. Like, you don't ask, you don't get was the number one thing she taught me very early on. Don't be afraid to speak up. Don't be afraid to ask for what you want. And she also taught me very early on that everything happens for a reason, and never look at anything in a negative way. These were the number one and two lessons that I was taught very early on by my mother that I carried throughout my entire life to this day. You don't ask, you don't get, and everything happens for a reason, and turn everything that you think is a negative into a positive. Because listen, we all have a choice to how we want to live every day. You can live with a positive mindset or a negative mindset. There's only two mindsets you can live with. That's it. So she taught me to live with a positive mindset and always look at, like, when something negative happens to you, like you guys are big business guys, when something goes wrong with the construction or this and that, or you didn't get a building that you were supposed to get, you know, she just said, it's happening for a reason. Take a step back. Look at the situation. Let's find out why it's happening in a positive way. Yeah. And so she was just so strong. Like, she was not afraid to speak up. She fought for me, as you know, because a woman, especially we're talking back in the 70s now.
Yeah.
A woman in that, they weren't quite, you know.
No, it's progression, evolution. Absolutely.
Exactly. So she just was tough. She would stand up. She would speak up.
Is she from Jersey?
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. So when you meet her, if you meet her here, because she's 76 now almost, next week actually. Everybody freaking loves her. Okay. But that said, if she doesn't like you, it's going to be
a problem.
Yeah. It's a problem. But if she loves you, you will have the best friend of your life.
She sounds Italian. Is there an Italian background there?
you would think
she's from Jersey. She is Jersey. That's her origin.
She's Jerseyan.
So how long were you in Jersey for?
Jersey, born and raised till 18. And okay. So at 18, I was supposed to go to college. I actually got accepted to University of Tampa. I was a terrible student, by the way, guys. So I'll give you some more context here. I was not a good student. I could care less about school.
You guys have a lot of rapport there, by the way.
Yeah, is that right?
Yeah, yeah, both yeah. you. Yeah, I, makes I just, a lot of sense.
Yeah,
he just finds areas to dig. He just, it's hard for him. He, sorry, he's like my little stepbrother.
Yeah, taller stepbrother. But
oh God, here we go.
Yeah, right.
I wasn't authority wasn't great with me. Mm. Even my coaches, I didn't get along too well.
What teams? What do you mean coaches? What
football, sport? Baseball, wrestling. I actually got along with the wrestling coach, but
was that due to being like from the neighborhood, kind of running around, with friends, or what, like, or just always kind of a rebel doing your own thing? Or
I became a little punk. I was like just a little pain in the ass.
Disdain for authority.
All right, so 18 comes, and 18, you got to make a decision, college or not.
Dad was supposed to, the divorce agreement at 8, when the divorce was, I was like 2 or so, 1 or 2. Don't even remember, but the divorce agreement, my mom would raise me, pay for everything, and then he would pay for college when it came time to pay for college. And then all of a sudden I got accepted, and he's like, oh, I don't have the money, which we found out later that he did, but he lied. That's a whole other story. But the moral of the, and by the way, here, okay, negative situation, right?
Right. Yeah.
Okay, couldn't go to college. But me, I'm like, shit, I would have failed out in 6 months anyway. Seriously. Right. I'd have been running a side business, doing something. So anyway, my mom said, what do we do now? I don't want to stay in this town. I got to get out of here. And I didn't want to put my mom into financial debt with financial, what do you call it, the loans?
Sure.
Student loans. So I said, she goes, what about the military? I said, all right. So next thing I know, there was 4 recruiters at the house within a couple of weeks, the Navy, Air Force, Marines, Coast Guard. So you all came in to kind of interview with me. And I was interviewing them, like it was, and I'll have no problem saying this, like the Marines, it was like, so wait a minute, Marines, you're trained to kill. You're the first in the fight. And the guy was like, oh yeah. Like thinking that was that was how to speak to me.
Right.
Cause I was pretty big then too.
Sure.
I'm like, so you're the first in the fight, first on the lines, you're trained to kill. He's like, yes. Thank you for your time. This isn't going to work out. Cause I didn't want to be in harm's way.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Interesting. So I specifically was down to the Air Force or the Navy.
But at 18, 18 for me personally, I felt invincible, right? And but you had the presence of mind to recognize, like, look, I am going to do military, but there is a possibility that it may be injured, right? Yeah. I mean, that was going through your head.
I'm the same way then as I am now.
Okay.
Like, I'm so extra. I can't even, when I said I don't actually use this stuff, I'm being serious about that. I don't touch cars. I don't change oils, tires.
Well, arm wrestling. No?
I don't know, because there's a possibility I could get injured.
Oh, yeah.
But for those, but this is a podcast, so not everybody sees it. So just for those of you at home that are listening, like this guy looks like he just is in a bodybuilding contest this morning.
Prior to, I asked him if he potentially, when he gets angry, does he turn green? And he gave me a nod that it's possible. Right? Yeah. I mean, it looks like the Hulk.
Yeah, it's possible.
Yeah. But when you say extra, you're extra big. I mean, you're physically imposing person. Yeah.
Like I sleep in zero gravity with a massage feature. And like, if I'm not like I can't go to hotels because I can't sleep in a bed like that's not in zero gravity elevated.
Yeah, sure.
I get manicures, pedicures every 2 weeks. I do the hair. Well, I got the eyebrows waxed.
That's definitely not Marine. Okay.
Yeah, right,
so let's just circle back, because I want to know your thought process here. So no Marine.
I mean, we could start veering down his routine.
Jeez. We'll get there, but let's reengage. So,
it's a big routine.
So no Marine. On the Marine. Then what?
Marine,
then
who came? Army
pitched you. Why? Running? Running?
They're the all due respect to Army guys.
Sure.
I respect all military
absolutely.
Guys.
Absolutely.
But they're the real, like, kind of grunts on the front line that are kind of just like, you just go fight. I'm like, no.
Okay,
you get dirty in the mud and dirt.
Okay. So you pick Navy.
What?
So you pick Navy.
So I picked Navy, and they put me on here's what's ironic is I took the test for the Navy, and I almost aced it. It's called the ASVAB, of how you qualify. So first thing you do is you take the ASVAB. It's called
an IQ test, or what is it?
Not really an IQ test. It's more of a. It's all realms of, school.
Oh, okay.
Math, science, whatever. Wow. It's one big encompassing, because however you test, they know which jobs to offer you in the military. Okay. That's how it works.
Okay.
And I scored like a 99. Like, my mom's like, how the hell? Because I was terrible in the SAT. I was terrible. School was maybe C's if I was lucky, right? And those were the classes where I actually got along with the teacher and got them to like me.
Gentleman C, gentleman C.
Right, exactly. So I took the ad, and so I could pick any job I wanted in the middle. Like, JD, you should go to the nuclear program. They wanted me to go to nuclear in the Navy. And nuclear is where and when you get out, they say, when you get out, you can apply. You'll make $50,000 to $70,000 a year. And back then, 50 to 70 grand was a lot of money, right? Late 80s, early 90s. So anyway, aced it. And so, but then I found out you have to sign up for 6 years instead of four. So this was a four-year commitment. They said, you've got to do 2 years, right? But then you have an automatic advancement out of boot camp. You go to third-class petty officer right out of boot camp. And that's a big pay jump, right? But you got to apply for it. And I said, 6 years, so two more. I'm like, sorry, it's not going to work. So I went with, as an operations specialist, so I worked with radar.
Okay.
Aircraft carrier, long story short, we were supposed to be stationed in Pensacola, Florida. We were on the way there, 18 years old. We were sailing on the way to Norfolk, because Norfolk is the stopover. We were in Philadelphia. We started in Philadelphia. I could do a whole podcast on Philadelphia, by the way. Yeah, sure. My life in Philly. Mm. Got jumped like twice on the streets.
Sounds like Philly.
Yeah. Lived in a row house with, you look around down on the ground outside of our row house, there's needles everywhere because people are doing.
San Francisco.
Yeah. That sounds like where I live actually.
Really? Really?
Oh, it's bad.
It's bad. It's,
but let's talk about that. So you're 18, you're what, 20 when you're living in Philadelphia?
No, I was 18.
Oh, 18 years old. Yeah, okay.
Right out of boot camp.
Okay. So, but, and then are you deploying? Are you on a ship at all?
No, we were in a dry dock. So we got the ship in dry dock, aircraft carrier. So we took it out of dry dock, the Kitty Hawk, and went down to Norfolk, supposed to be stationed in Pensacola, Florida. But on the way there, they literally changed our home port on the way there. And at this point, I think I might've been 19 to San Diego. And I'm talking about the higher ups in the ship, the chiefs and the captains and everything, or the lieutenants, whatever. They had already moved their families to.
Oh, wow.
That's how close it was to the end of being moved, and they just changed the home port to San Diego.
Just quick question. So I like where this is going, but let's come back to your disdain for authority, because from what I understand, I've never joined the Navy.
Yeah.
But I would assume it's pretty regimented. Like there's a lot of things that you're told what to do, and you don't really like that, right? So how did you respond to that?
It's a very good question, man. And you picked up on that. That's because that's ironic that I, but so it's disdain for authority, but something else my mom instilled on me very early was whatever you commit to, do it to your best capability. Do your best. Mm. If you commit, you see it through.
Mm. Yes.
So we took that to the military, said, okay, if you're going to do this, do it right.
So she's kind of talking you through this. Like at this point, if you're going to do this, you're going to commit to this, then here's what we need from you.
You know, she just said, do your best.
Okay.
Yeah. Because listen, I was supposed to be in college. 1 month later, I was being carted off to boot camp, to a physical to go to boot camp.
Yeah.
Away from my family, away from my mother.
First time
within 1 month, not knowing I was going in the military at all. There was never military in my town. We were in a kind of a uppity town in Jersey where the
Cherry Hill, or where is it?
No, it was called Basking Ridge.
Oh, okay.
Basking Ridge, New Jersey.
All right.
Maybe five people have heard of that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I haven't. Yeah.
So nobody went to the military. It was like almost like frowned upon. Like, oh, you went to the military. You know, I heard DeHart went to military. Because everybody else went to, their parents could pay for college and, you know, it was the thing. Yeah. So anyway, she said, whatever you do, do your best. So when I went in the military, I committed. I committed to doing it and doing my best. And it was the best thing that ever happened to me. So going back to where I am now, I would attribute the best thing that happened to me was the military. In boot camp number one was where my light went off in boot camp, where I thought – I think every person in our country should start out of high school, go to boot camp prior to going to college, prior to doing anything.
Put them in eighth grade.
I'm serious. Was it the physicality? What was it?
It's the discipline, the discipline, the attention to detail was what I really got out of it.
Give us some examples.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't just fold your clothes and put it in your thing. The clothes had to be perfect because nothing would fit unless it was folded properly.
That would kill me. It's hard.
Seriously, it was unbelievable. The bed would have to be folded. You heard of hospital corners, they call it?
Yeah.
Hospital corners. So, and then you had to learn how to interact with another guy that you had never met before. So that in itself of, you know, because I always say the quality of our lives is dependent upon the way we interact with other individuals. That's a fact.
Love that.
If you interact well with other individuals, you're going to have a great quality of life. If you don't, you're not. Period. It's that simple.
It's funny, though. They don't teach that, right?
They
don't teach how to engage with people.
There's no schools.
No, there isn't.
No. No.
And it's getting worse in the era of...
You are getting worse, yeah. So anyway, moving on. okay, keep going. We're talking about the discipline of the discipline and how that translates into like your later life, your afterlife of post... military.
Yeah, so that was boot camp. Then I went to my first A school, which was in Damneck, Virginia. So Virginia Beach, that's a whole nother podcast was Virginia Beach alone because I was 19, had a fake ID, was going to the bars. But that's then we went into barracks. But my point is that the military gave me structure. Discipline was number one.
Sure.
They were beating me down, and I was bigger in boot camp too. So of course they picked on me constantly, would making me do push-ups. But then they made me a leader in boot camp. So in boot camp, the way it works is they give leadership roles out within the first week. So they see who the leaders are in the camp, right? Boot camp. I think we had 55 guys, 60 guys. So they would pick out the leaders and say, okay, this person's going to be this leader, this leader. So they made me a section leader. I was 18 years old in boot camp, and I became a section leader. So each section had about 10 guys, six section leaders, 10 guys, right? So now I got 10 guys I'm in charge of, wow. Right? And all of them were older than me. Some guys were in their 30s, some guys in their 20s, late 20s. And just because of a little bit because of my physical stature, they made me a leader right off the bat.
Sure.
So that in itself I took.
So let me ask you a question. We got to jump in right on this because this is such a topic that we go through on almost everyone that we've had on the podcast. And we're both super curious on your opinion, leadership learned or leadership born?
That's a tough one, man.
I know, but I'm gonna keep going at it because I need an answer.
A million times this question.
I know.
I believe some people have it in them; they're born with it. But my belief system is everything's programmed for us. Programming is everything, and programming begins very early.
Sure,
from the time you're a child, and the programming begins of the dynamic in your home, your parents, or your parent. And how were they? Were they leaders? Were they strong? Because eventually, subconsciously, you become who you hang around.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe, yes, we're born with it. But I think it also has to be cultivated over time. So I also think leaders can be made.
Right.
So I think the answer is both.
Yeah.
I really do. I don't think there's one definitive answer there.
I do too. And we've gone back and forth with a lot of different guests. And most people have a pretty strong opinion on the matter.
They do.
Yeah. Do you? I don't think I've ever asked you.
I lean towards both, to be honest. I really do. I think it's almost a nature nurture. You're going back to child psychology, quite frankly, right? Nature nurture component.
Right.
I think there's both. I think that there are there's DNA. I think there's leadership DNA. I think that does exist. But at the same time, I think you can learn. I think you can learn to lead. I really do. So I think it's a blend.
Yeah.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And I remember as a kid, I was really shy. But then I finally got confidence. And number one thing in our life, and when you're leading or when you're running anything, a business, is confidence. Or when you're interacting with a client, what's the number one thing they buy? Not your product, not your service. It's you. Your confidence.
Yeah.
You and your confidence.
That's so often missed. It's so often missed.
Confidence. Well, we've talked about confidence. So I'm curious. We're kind of jumping around a little bit. And we'll kind of ask some questions throughout the story. But confidence, I think one of the things that confident people do, it's not that they don't have bad things happen to them. It's how they recover from bad things that do happen. So it's how they bounce, right? Yeah. And I think it's also a level of how confident you are just in a natural state. Yep. And you're not faking it. You're actually truly believing yourself and what you're doing. So tell me a little bit about how you treat confidence for yourself. So what are you aware of it? Are you working on it? Are you give us some ideas on things that you do to better yourself in that regard?
Well, confidence comes from being prepared. Like when you know what you're doing or know what you're, let's say, and I'll use my business as an example I'm known as the sleep whisperer. And so people now, when they come to me, they see all the reviews online saying, hey, this is the guy to go to. So that helps. But when they come to me, I talk to them in a way like you can't argue with it because I'm so confident because I know so much about the human body and the way that a sleeping surface will work on your body, like physiologically, circulation, oxygen intake. I start going through all this stuff. So confidence comes with preparation, I believe.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to be prepared. When it's coming out of your mouth.
I agree. Let's talk though a little bit about little about the narrative of the evolution of the sleep whisperer, because I'm fascinated by it. Yeah. But you didn't start there. You started in the Navy, and then you had a different job, and you were in sales, right? Yeah. Where did this evolution occur? How did explain to me the process? Because now you're here, now you're confident, you have a great business. How did you get from A to B to Z?
Wow. That's a lot easier asked than answered, because when I first got out of the military, which was 1993, the day I got out, I started bouncing at the bars in Pacific Beach.
Oh,
that sounds fun.
Yeah, that was fun. That was fun.
Yeah.
So started bouncing there, and then put myself through community college at Mesa College over here, which was, I cheated my whole way through. guys, remember, I'm a terrible student. I literally cheated all the way.
You delegated. You delegated.
Delegated. Yeah. Yeah. Masterminded.
Yeah.
Masterminded.
It's just being a CEO. But yeah, go ahead. He does that all the time. Yeah.
So then I was an X-ray technologist. One of my other prior lives.
Like a radiologist versus a technologist.
Radiologic technologist. So you have radiologist, which is a doctor.
Right.
Mesa College had a program where you become an X-ray technologist. So I would take X-rays of people.
So did you analyze the bone and give that report to a physician to read?
I would take the actual radiograph of the whatever's on the person, the bone, the chest X-ray, sure. and then I would give that to a radiologist to actually read.
Got it.
Could I read them myself? Yeah, because I saw thousands of them.
You started getting good at it.
Yeah. I could see if there was a broken bone.
So let's talk about like right now in your life at that stage, whether it's bouncing or school. Are you paying any attention to mattresses or sleep?
Yeah. No, God, no.
Like
zero.
Zero.
Yeah,
zero.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
Then I was running nightclubs. Then I was a VIP host. I was running, then we'd start partying at 2 a.m. till 6 a.m. I ran go down the list here.
Did you enjoy it?
I had a blackjack table. We had
Hold on, sir. We're getting to the good stuff here. Stop interrupting.
I'm sorry.
We're running a blackjack table. Yeah. Hey, I like mattresses. I'm sure we'll get to it. But so you're running from your. That's fascinating. 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. You're running a blackjack table.
Yeah.
And by the way, statute of limitations is expired.
Yeah, you're fine. I know.
Yeah, you're fine.
That's why I'm saying. I thought about it. Probably like, wonder if that'll come.
No, that's okay.
No,
that's okay.
We interview a lot of criminals. Don't worry about it.
All right, so that's okay. Tell me about that.
Oh man. Well, gosh.
What you can tell me about that?
It was.
Is it like a garage door?
No,
like
we had speakeasy. a whole thing. We had an automatic shuffler, six deck shoe. Pit boss. I had a dealer. My dealer was phenomenal because he never lost. And I'm not going to say his name, but he's Chaldean. Uh-huh. And the Chaldeans in San Diego. My whole network
mess around.
Yeah, my whole network is Chaldean. My attorneys, my CPA, my car broker, all Chaldean. And also my blackjack dealer was Chaldean as well.
Okay.
So anyway,
how did that idea come about?
We were hustling, man. We did everything.
And you were in that, and you were in the scene. And so was it all people that you were, because you were in the relationship business long before you got into mattresses, right?
For sure.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So you're hosting at nightclubs, 2 a.m. Yep. The nightclubs close. So people need something to do.
Correct.
And so that you were just transitioning them over to a blackjack room.
That's right.
Okay. So you're an entrepreneur before you even knew it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So we were, we were gamblers. We loved gambling on football, baseball, anything. So we were heavy gamblers back then in the 90s, me and my crew.
Mm-hmm.
And we were strip clubs.
You understood as a gambler that you can't win. So you're like, I might as well be on the other side.
Correct. Yeah. So we started, let's go to the other side. And we started booking our friends' bets for football and everything. So we did that as well.
Okay.
And then we started the blackjack table because we just started doing a little small, but then it got really big where we'd have 10 people waiting for us when we got home on the table, ready to go. And we had the shoe. We had and my dealer was.
So, okay. So are you security watching for anybody counting or?
We had somebody behind like the pit boss.
That you did. Okay.
Watch everybody. And then we had a guy at the front door because the cops came every time. Like literally every time the cops came every, cause we were 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. We're an apartment complex.
Based on noise though, not the activity.
Correct. Yeah. They had no idea that we had a blackjack game going up top. So my security guard, which was the bouncer at the bar in Pacific Beach, which we knew all the cops because there's fights every night. So the cops would always come and we were their friends. So they'd come and see Carlos at the front door. Oh, Carlos. Well, yeah. All right. Listen, we're having a couple people over. Got a little out of hand. We'll get them out. Then we'd close the windows and say, don't, sorry, man. We'll get them out. We didn't plan this many people coming over. Meanwhile, my God. All right, hit me. Like they're actually still dealing with the cops at the front door.
Yeah, you only got 4 hours.
Right. We got to turn over here. I got a McDonald's to pay for at 6 a.m.
That's right.
And go to Stingers.
That's how the shoe became a shoe. That's how they started. Instead of, what are you doing with the cards? Yeah. You're not going to do that. You need it to automatically happen so you don't lose any time.
Yeah.
Vegas isn't dumb.
No, they're not.
We got to turn it over, man. We got to make sure
nobody shuffles anymore.
No.
Yeah. Automated.
Okay, so you're running that. So you're doing pretty well. I mean, you got a lot of stuff going on. So give us for an idea of how old you are at the time.
This is mid-20s.
And then do you go into mattresses after that?
So I went to X-ray technology at 28. I started the program.
Okay.
I graduated at age 30. Okay. Started doing personal, but this is where everything changed for me. So, because you know that there's an age at 28. Do you know this, that there's a thing? Like, do you guys know it's like a Mercury thing or retro? I don't even know what it's called, but it's at 28. It's either you go to this level where it's a life changing thing in a good way or in a bad way. It's a thing. One of the girls on my podcast went into this in detail about at 28. It's the number
you're talking about. It's like a milestone.
Yes.
It's a specific
28
milestone.
Years old is a number between 28 and 30 is where either you get a clue and step up and have convergence and go to your next level, or you digress and it's a mess.
Huh. That's weird. I got married at 28. Yeah. It's really weird.
What would you call that? Digression?
No, I think, it was the next step in my life. Just, ended in divorce, but it was the right move for me at the time.
At the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah. I think 28 is kind of that where you're into your career long enough. Cool. You're into your adulthood long enough. Yeah. You have enough perspective.
Even from an athlete's perspective.
Is it any different for a male or a female? I feel like
28.
Really?
It's the number.
It feels like a woman 28 is a little more mature than a man 28.
I think so.
A woman is always more mature than a man.
We're getting a real glimpse into his life. Right. Yeah. All right. So 28. So 28, what happened to you? Like, tell us your did you go up? Did you go down?
I went up. I read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Oh, yeah.
That was what did it for me. I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which ironically, my freaking dad gave it to me.
Wow.
The guy was just not up. He just sent it to me. He goes, I really want you to read this book. I'm like, and thank God it's an easy read.
Are you at that time still talking to your dad? Does he have an influence in your life?
No, not at all.
And does he now?
No, he's gone now. He's dead now. Oh, yeah, okay. He died 5-6 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Sorry about that.
Never. No. I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, just never had a relationship. Unfortunately for him, frankly.
Yeah.
Because he missed out on a killer life. I mean, with me and my family, my kids, like, he never even saw my kids.
Wow.
Never.
So he did want the one thing he did do well was send you a book just randomly.
Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah.
And that was it.
Okay. So you read that at 28.
Right. About 28, went to X-ray technology, and then went into network marketing. So network marketing was the business that changed everything for me. And all the success principles and the way I conduct my business is from network marketing. To this day.
Tell us some about those things.
So network marketing, they teach you immediately, all the principles of this is where I learned that the quality of our lives is dependent upon the way we interact with other individuals. Right. That was the number one premise. Number two, people buy from people they like, and people like people like themselves. So all the sales, I don't even like calling them techniques because it sounds cheap, sure. Bad. Sure. But to, get someone to buy you or your product, your service, you have to get people to like you. And that's where I learned that was network.
So is this like neurolinguistics, mirroring?
Matching and mirroring, correct. All that stuff. Matching, mirroring. People like building bridges, finding things in common.
Yeah.
Because that's what, people aren't going to remember. Like when people come into my store, the mattresses are phenomenal, but they're more going to remember me most likely.
And do you actively mirror? Do you consciously go, okay, I'm going to mirror?
Or
is it natural?
Yeah. It's natural, but sometimes I have to consciously do it.
Wow.
Because when you're talking to somebody like our stance right now, me and Casey right here, I've got my arms out. I've got my legs. We're almost identical right now.
Yeah.
So I'll do it sometimes automatically. It just comes to me.
Yeah.
Because you've been doing it and you've been practicing. Yeah, it kind of goes back to the discipline of practice and confidence and some of that stuff.
It creates forced habit in a way, which is good.
Yeah.
I don't think that's bad.
It's subconscious. So subconsciously, this person's like, man, this person's just like me. And the bottom line is if you talk to people and ask questions and genuinely you're interested about them, which I am, then it's done, because people like talking about themselves.
Yeah.
This is why this is odd for me to tell my story, because normally I'm interviewing my guests for hours about their story and I always get it back on them. So this to me is my first time ever on the other side of the mic. So it's weird for me to share my story.
Cool. And for those that don't know, you do have a podcast. Yeah. We haven't really talked about your successes, right? We've kind of gone through the backstory.
That's why I said, dude, how far back?
I think it's fascinating because really that's the foundation. That's the core.
Origin's
and I think a lot
so
of
important. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's important. And then, so you have all of these successes and one of them being the mattress store. And I think it's a really cool story. And I want to jump in how you transitioned during COVID. Yeah. And then also, talking about the podcast. So you do have a podcast and when you're talking about, this is the first time on the other side. So you this is your first time being interviewed. So you're talking a lot about,
ever.
Interesting.
Awesome. Ever. Awesome.
How exciting.
In my entire
life. Which is interesting because you not only do mattresses, not only have a podcast, but you're kind of a social media guy that is kind of living your life on a platform. Right.
Correct.
Is it all, and I'm jumping around, but is it all Instagram or is it all platforms or how did that come about? And when did that come about? Were you early to the game in social media?
I wouldn't say so. My wife, I call my wife the trailblazer on everything. Cause my wife, was the first on Facebook, and Facebook I thought was ridiculous. This was like 09, 10, right? I'm like, what is this? Come on, that is ridiculous. So then she was the first one to get onto Instagram. So she's always the first one to get on a platform, and then I'll follow. I'm like, I don't need two. I was like, this is ridiculous. I don't need two. But now I'm like, I post every single thing of my life on Instagram. So mostly for me, it's Instagram, the stories, because the stories are easy. So it's gone to a thing where, you know, because we all have a brand. And one thing that our brand that my wife and I, we've been together for 21 years, and we're jumping ahead. How I met her was crazy. So 21 years, and we have this brand of a family of harmonious, loving, affection, passion, drive, ambition, go down the list. So we like to project that brand to the universe and to everybody that wants to watch that, hey, this is possible. Yeah. So that's our mentality, is our family brand is what we're putting out there. So other people can see that, okay, this is possible for a family.
Yeah.
Cause let's be frank, this day and age, the world is screwed up pretty bad. Right.
Yes.
Families are messed up. There's very few families that are harmonious. Most marriages are, glorified roommates, at best.
Do you think part of it too is people focus on the negative so much that in a relationship you're so worried or concerned about what someone doesn't have or what your relationship is lacking? People aren't promoting it. It's very rare you see couples or families promoted on social media, right? A lot of it is the single life and like certain things and pictures and, you know, you're promoting a life that you either think you have or you want to have, but people are very rarely saying, look, I'm in a happy, you know, faithful marriage with kids that I'm trying to raise and bring up in a certain light. And I think that isn't told very often.
Yeah. I just, this topic right here, bro, is like, it's one that gets me, like, I can go on forever about this topic alone, is because society, you know, it's sad. It saddens me to think at where we're at. Everybody is not, nobody's present anymore. Everybody's faces are in their devices. You know, as much as I'm promoting it out there.
Scrolling culture, we call it.
Scrolling culture, dude. Nobody's present anymore. Nobody's connecting anymore. Let's be we need to connect. You know, humans are meant to connect. And look at what just happened for 2 years. We were disconnected. We were masked up, told to stay home. So I can go down that forever just on how bad this is. So, you know, mentally for everybody that's involved.
Yeah, I don't even think we've seen some of the repercussions.
No, right? You're seeing it now with all the mass shootings that are happening. That's not a coincidence. That's not an accident. Then all of a sudden there's more right now.
Dissociation.
Happening than ever right now. So anyway, we'll go back to network marketing. So network marketing, learned all of my principles of how I run my business now from network marketing. And I was doing that while I was an X-ray technologist. Then I became a sales trainer and a personal development trainer, public speaker for about 2 years with network marketing. So I became one of the trainers. So I was speaking in front of, you know, thousands of people on a weekly basis while I was doing X-ray technology.
Did you ever have any fear on stage or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's normal. You get nervous before you go up on stage, but it was,
What are you talking about? As that's a good question, but what are you talking about when you're speaking?
Yeah.
Are you you're actually training? Yeah, is that what you're doing?
Yeah. The stuff that I was just telling you, success principles, we think what you think. And then how to, you know, I've always been a very good connector. So a networker. So, you know, in network marketing, obviously the way you build your business is by attracting, connecting with people and networking.
Okay.
So I was the best at it out of the whole group. So because I met people like this really quickly, would find connections and get them.
But then you fell asleep. How does that work?
But I do want to know. I think this is important because I think networking, especially now where if you've had 2 years, we talk about practice and discipline. Yeah. People haven't had any practice or discipline at networking or building relationships. Like, you know, you go out and you try to meet somebody and you're kind of stumbling over your words. I remember when everything opened back up, I would go out in public and I'm like, I haven't talked to it. Like there, random there, people.
Hesitation even to go out.
I haven't talked to random people in a long time. So you're like, what are some things from a networking perspective or just building those relationships of people you don't know that you do that are successful or that you've trained others to do?
The bottom line is you have to have self-worth first. You're not going to meet or connect with many people unless you think highly of yourself. I'll start there. Self-esteem.
Okay.
Because most people don't have self-esteem. Most people are so insecure with themselves. They're so worried about what people are thinking about them. They're so driven. And I always say this, most people live through the eyes of their peers, like how they think they should be acting. Sure. That's most. The percentage is very high. 97%, I think, is the percentage of how many people actually live through the eyes of their peers, not even living their true self of who they actually are. Because they have low self-esteem of what they're supposed to do. The ego. I can go on that forever. The ego is what drives everybody. When our true self is who are we actually? And do I have self-esteem of that? I have confidence in who I am as a person to bring value to others. Because if you think, if you genuinely know, like I know for a fact I can bring value to every person that I meet. You and I met. I knew right away you've got value for me for sure. I'm excited about that because you're at this level that's way higher than where I'm at. And I'm going to feed off that and jump on your in your draft and really kind of like I'm fired up about that.
That's awesome.
But I know I'm going to bring back to you is this. I'm on your podcast. I'm going to fire away some stuff that I've got in my mind or whatever. And also my branding aspect of how I brand all my bring all my brands together in one shot, which is what you said you're is what you're doing. Right.
Right. Well, trying to do. Yeah.
Trying to do. So I've done that and I'm doing it pretty well. So I know I can bring that value to you. Yeah. I already know that. I know.
Well, the other thing too, I'm a big energy guy, right? Yeah, like your energy is kind of contagious, right? That, so you walk around, there's a wake in that you're just basically bringing other people around you that are saying, hey, you got to get on board.
Yeah.
You know, so I like that. I try to bring that into my industry, my business, because I think, you know, mattresses, probably not a lot of people with a lot of energy selling mattresses, escrow, kind of the same thing. Yeah, you know, these are not sexy industries. Oh, yeah. I think we talked about this the last time we were like, yeah, we're trying to make escrow sexy. It's like, you're trying to make mattresses sexy. Yeah. And you've actually done that, right?
Yeah, right.
With some of the things that you've done. Okay. So I don't want to interrupt. So
passion is very attractive. When people live with passion, when people are passionate, excited, positive all the time, that's attractive, right? So to connect with other people, you have to have self-esteem that you can bring value to, because that's what you want to think is every person that you bring is, it's not with them, they call with them, what's in it for me? Everybody thinks what's in it for me, right? That's the first thing that everybody, I'm not going to do anything unless there's something in it for me. You can't think that way. If you truly want to have a true connection with another human being, you have to be thinking, how do I bring value to this person?
Absolutely.
That's it. Yep. And then with every interaction of every person that you meet, you have to ask them questions. Hey, what's going on? Genuinely find out who they are.
I think that's a good word though. Genuinely, right? Because it can come across as very disingenuous. Correct. If you're just asking to ask, you're checkmarking a box of like, hey, I asked two questions.
Yeah. You know? So I don't know if you can teach that is what I'm saying here. Like I'm genuinely curious with every person that I meet. And I ask a million questions when I meet somebody, how'd you get here? What'd you do? Wow. Where were you there? Ba-da-bing, ba-da-bing.
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated. And next thing I know, I've got a connection. Hey, let's like,
well, that's implicit engagement.
Yeah.
That's implicit engagement.
And listen, this day and age, we're being programmed to not do this.
Absolutely.
So yeah. what do we do here? Where's the society going to go eventually when we're being programmed to not connect?
Well, I think there's a craving going on right now with it though. And so I think it's going to come back and hopefully we'll see this, you know, there's got to be a recovery, right? Like I'm a big solutions person. We could talk about problems all day long. Yeah. There's a ton of them in the world and a lot of people just focus on those. But I think doing stuff like this, going out and doing like actual experiences are really super important for people right now and they're craving it. So you've done some training. I'm now... mattresses.
Yeah.
So,
we're dying to know.
I told you, bro, if we're going to go back, I would go for 2 hours.
I'm just glad that we're here now. Cause this is what I really want to hear about.
Yeah. Okay.
You're a mattress whisperer.
So sleep whisperer.
Oh,
let's get it straight.
there's some ancillary product you can cross sell.
Yeah. That might be a
cross. I was the mattress whisperer for a while.
Oh really?
But
you rebranded.
No. Cause you got your total addressable market. Everyone sleeps.
Yeah.
But not everyone sleeps on a mattress.
That's correct.
Yeah, and there's a lot more encompassing.
Very smart.
Yeah, yeah. And sleep isn't just about the mattress. So you've got all the ancillary stuff.
Like you got to spin off things.
Yeah, you got to have a pillow because a pillow, it provides a third of your
spinal alignment. Pillows are so very hard for me to find. Yeah. I cannot find a good.
I know a guy.
Do you really?
Yeah, he's right here.
Does he whisper?
Yeah. Well, depends on how long we're on this podcast.
Give me the evolution here. So
X-ray technology, network marketing, I was doing the same time.
Right.
And then network marketing, I met a guy who was doing on another team who I heard, he always paid cash for the next seminar, like in front of everybody, made a scene about it. I'm like, what the hell is this guy? Literally stand up in the middle of the seminar. They say, we're going to offer a discount on the next seminar. He'd stand up right there. If you register today, and he'd stand up in the middle of the crowd and walk up and reach in his pocket and peel off about $300-$400 in cash. Back then, that was a lot, like ridiculous amount of money to me. I was paying everything with credit cards. I had no extra money. So I found out, I was like, what is it with this guy? What does he do? And they said, oh, he owns furniture and mattress stores. So I was like, really? So I went up to his name is Bryce Ball. There's your shout, bro. All right. And I said, dude, what's up with that? He goes, well, I start guys in storage units all over the country. So if you want to start up, I can actually start you in a storage unit with an ad in the Penny Saver and you'll be under my license.
Penny Saver. Yeah.
Talk about a hustle.
Well, okay. But what are you selling in the storage?
Mattresses
in the storage unit.
Yes.
Genius.
It's unbelievable, bro. You have no idea. This is the most insane story you could ever
make. I'm so intrigued.
So I had just gotten my license in x-ray technology. So here it took 2 years. I felt like a doctor. That's how much I was studying for this damn thing, which is ironic. I finished number two in my class in x-ray technology. Couldn't even pass anything in high school, but that's another story. So anyway, 6 months later, I said, "That, you know what, bro, I'm ready." He goes, "Well, I only have," and I lived up in Kearney Mesa. He said, "Well, I only have Chula Vista available for," I'm like, "I'll take it." I didn't care where it was.
Right.
Chula Vista. So I had to go. He goes, "All right, next week," this was on the weekend, he said, "Monday, go down and find a storage unit." I'm like, "Okay." I've never even been to a storage unit, bro, at this point. I'm like, "Okay, well, what size?" He goes, "You need a 10 by 30. Okay, so 10 by 30. Okay, cool. So I went to, I had a Cadillac STS, green Cadillac STS, dude, nice. With nice. Chrome wheels. Strong. Another story.
Right, I'm sure.
Unbelievable. My wife met me. She's like, "What in the hell is this guy?" She loved it. So that's another story again. So anyway, I drive down to Main Street in Chula Vista. I drive up and down Main Street and I see Public Storage. And so I drive, I go in. It's like the first, because I project everything. My mom taught me everything was faith. Have faith, have faith, have faith. So I always know that things are going to work out for you, and they always will. Okay, perfect. So I knew that. And so the first place I went to had 10 by 30s. And the girl, I hit it off with her at the front desk. She was fantastic. I think it was Esmeralda. unbelievable, right? So I didn't say, "Hey, I'm coming in to sell mattresses out of your storage," you know, because right. that was actually not right. legal. You can't do that. You're not supposed to.
Right. Well, yeah, and you went
may,
in, right?
May not with be the, zoned. They may not be, yeah, I don't know.
I'm like, "I need 2 10 by 30s. So, okay. And then they had this deal going on where you the first month was $1. And the first month was $1, and then you'd pay the whatever if you sign up for 3 months or something. And I can't remember. I think I maybe started with one at the gate, but okay. and just told her I'm just going to be storing mattresses or something. So he said, "Don't tell her that you're going to be selling, you know, conducting business out of the storage unit." Okay. Me, I'm like, "Oh God, here we go." So I get 10 by 30. Call him up. I'm like, "We're good." "Okay, because cool. I'll run the ad. I'll bring some stock down next week." This is literally like this. So he came down on a Tuesday when the ads hit and the Penny said, "Do you remember the Penny? Do you remember the Penny?"
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a free publication, some cheapo crap publication that people look in the back for cheap stuff. That's what it was.
I didn't know people actually looked at that.
Do you even know? Rachel doesn't even know.
Yeah.
Penny Saver, like a tiny little thing.
No, I remember that.
Crapola. So anyway. Crapola. So Tuesday comes and Monday, I can't remember the timeline, but long story short, we set up a little makeshift showroom in the 10 by 30 storage unit. Three beds with, and I also had furniture and a catalog. So they were on a sleigh beds back then. We had sleigh beds.
Yeah.
That's when they were popular. So three sleigh beds, three matches, and then a cheap piece of shit on the wall, leaned up against the wall. And I didn't know these techniques back then. I had no idea what I was doing. I was just coming off passion. So I didn't realize I was doing bait and switch right off the bat. So the one in the ad was like a $125 queen mattress. It was against the wall. It was a piece of foam with like a sewn in thing that was supposed to be a pillow top. It was awful. That's my ad, right? $125 pillow top. No idea. So now you know in storage units you have a gate that you have to buzz people.
Oh,
yeah. You can't just come into a storage unit. So now they're calling me, my cell phone.
What's the turnover? What's the volume? I mean, did you have a line out the gate?
No. Okay. You book appointments, which is ironic because I pivoted the whole business model pretty much back to how I started.
Right.
Private appointments. So I was booking appointments.
Makes sense.
They'd come up. I'd have to run up and I'd drive up in the car to buzz them in the gate and they'd come back to the storage unit. And I'd have a catalog there. I had a little radio there, like a little showroom going on.
Little vibe.
So they're coming in thinking they're getting a 125 mattress, but correct. That one's against the wall. And then you have three.
Yes, terrible.
You have the good, and medium, and best.
With a 525 mattress,
correct.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. So, and I was selling furniture out. Oh, you have furniture too? Yeah. And then we're perching, and I call and do. So my buddy came down, Bryce, one day, taught me how to price out of the catalog, taught me how margins work. He had me working on a ridiculously low margin. I had no idea what that meant. Just to get business and steal it from other people that were in the pennies, because other guys were doing this in the Penny Saver.
Yeah, you had competition within the penny. Yeah.
Yeah.
It means you have a market.
Right. Yeah. So that's how it all started right there. And I would do x-ray technology from 9:30 at night till 7 in the morning. And then 7 in the morning, I'd go in my scrubs from Kaiser Permanente in Mission Valley and drive down to Chula Vista in my scrubs and then sell mattresses for the rest of the day. So I wasn't sleeping much at all. I was Back then, I was
the really, irony as a sleep whisperer.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah,
I was selling sleep but not sleeping. It was awful, and I was out of shape. That's a whole nother.
So then, so getting into your own, you started to understand what margin was.
Yeah. So then I started expanding. I got another 10 by 30. Right. I need to have stock on hand because I didn't have stock on hand. They were having to wait for their product. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm like, I need to have stock on hand. He's like, all right.
Because that is one thing when you buy a mattress, you want it right now, right?
Yeah. Especially a cheapo and then he's like, you need to get a guy to do deliveries. So this guy that worked as a medical assistant at the hospital, Jorge, I'll never forget him. He's the nicest guy ever. His family was amazing. So he had a pickup truck. I said, hey, you want to do deliveries for me on the side? So he would come down from the hospital and do my deliveries in his pickup truck. And earning, you know, he was loving it. So anyway, then I got another 10 by 30. Then I got another one. Within 3 months, I had 4 10 by 30s, and I was selling more of the storage unit.
Are you still having one showroom and then everything else is inventory? Correct.
That's right.
Yeah.
The other showroom, I started showing dining sets. So I kind of had two showrooms.
Okay.
Because dining sets
increased your product line.
Well, dining sets were a big ticket. They were like $1,500 to $2,000 for one dining set. So I was like, ooh, if I can sell it, just hey, an 8-piece dining set with Hutch, call it a day. I was like, so anyway, long story short, within 4 months, I was selling more per week than anybody he'd ever had in a storage unit in 10 years. He's like, what in the hell are you doing? And I got my overhead down so low because the girl at the front, I actually gave her because her and her kids lived on site. And they lived on site and they had this crappy like mattress. It was terrible. So I said, listen, I'll give you a king, beautiful king mattress. Just take care of me. Let me know, you know. So she was then letting people in for me at the gate.
Yeah. That's fascinating though, right? Like that part of it right there from a business perspective. So few people get this in life is just what you just said, right? Like for you, you just said it like, hey, I gave her a mattress.
Humanity.
No, it's connecting dots that no one else can put together. It's not humanity. It's a human touch though.
I disagree. He's taking something. He's engaging. And just like you said, you take genuine interest in every human you've been in. That helps your business.
Yeah.
That helps you grow business.
Definitely.
Yeah. But I'm saying you see things that someone, that's an opportunity, right? Like she has, she didn't even know you're solving a problem. She doesn't know she has.
She picked up on the fact that I was selling stuff out of the storage. She picked up on that pretty quick within a couple of weeks.
Did you ever receive warnings or anything? Were you concerned?
I hit it off with her. And then she'd tell me like when the people who own the storage facility, she goes, JD, they're going to be here on Tuesday doing a walkthrough. So be careful between 8 and 10.
Yeah. That's
so great. I literally was close. I'd be in the storage unit on sleeping on my bed at between 8 and 10 while they're walking around in my storage unit. Like literally on site and then making sure my appointments didn't start till after they left.
Yeah, that's crazy.
So anyway, got her a mattress. So then she was on my side. Then she was actually letting people in for me. This was the kicker. This is how, and my overhead was so freaking low. My guy's like, how the hell are you have such a low overhead? And it was like, well, I got her to do the dollar specials on every month. So she would say that I'm getting another 10 by 30 over here, but I wouldn't. I'd still have this one. So she was hooking me up there because I was kept taking care of. I was give her pillows. I would take it. She was living large on site, bro. Best king mattress you ever seen. Pillows. The kids were happy. And so then I got all – like every month I literally had three storage units that were a dollar and the other one was 300.
Wow.
Think about that overhead. It's nothing.
Yeah. Right.
So he'd come down on Sundays, my guy, and we'd divvy up and do the payouts. And the percentage he was giving me was absurd. It was like 70, 30 to him.
Wow.
And he fronted everything. I didn't front anything. All of his product, he fronted all the everything, the inventory, everything. So anyway, I got my overhead low. And that's how this started. So then within about 7, he goes, anytime you want, you can buy me out all the stock that you have on hand and start your own business. And then it's 100% yours. But you take over everything. You get a warehouse, you get a showroom, whatever you want to do. And then I'm your rep from that point forward. So you know how it is in business, in a retail, you have a sales rep. So regardless if it's him or somebody, somebody's taking a percentage. So when you sell product, a rep makes the percentage and you deal with the rep between you and the manufacturer. You know how that works, right?
Yeah. Sure.
So, and then he would become my rep. And so 8 months in, I told my wife, I'm like, you know, baby, I think I can do this because we were humming. We were doing really well out of a storage. Then I was doing my own deliveries, by the way. So I got to the point where because I wanted the extra cash because my guy was making 100, 150 a day in cash doing the deliveries after the day. So I was borrowing my friend's truck. She'd drive her truck down, take my Cadillac. And I was then on the way home. I remember coming home with like 80 to 100 in cash in my pocket from doing deliveries.
Did you provide a 70-30 split for your friend?
No.
What was the deal there?
Give me an idea.
Deliveries are all mine.
How many mattresses are you selling at the time?
I actually don't remember the
ballpark. Was it a couple or was it a lot?
A couple a day?
10 to 15 a week, maybe.
Okay. A week. Okay.
Yeah.
Because like, what I want to do is once you open your warehouse and your store, and then I want to look at the numbers then COVID and then God, the one-on-one. Yeah. Like I'm just for understanding how the mattress business works. So curious.
10 to 15, okay, at least a week at that point, doing some bedroom sets, some dining sets.
Okay.
Then I started doing deliveries myself. I remember coming home like at night, like with a handful of like $80, $100 in cash. But back then I literally thought I was like a millionaire. I was like, sure. What's up, man? I mean, I throw it on the counter. Like, what's up, baby? I got you. You know what I mean? Oh yeah. Just like $100.
That's good.
I was like, yeah, baby, what's up?
I told you I'd make it.
You're right. $100. Now it's like,
but you stopped doing radiology.
So eventually, I've been doing radiology for about a total of 5 years. And I said to my wife, I said, you know what? I'm going to try this. She was had a really good job at HSBC. And I said, you need to keep doing that to cover me because it's going to take me about 6 months to get my feet under me and really learn this business on how to run it with overhead. Because I had to get a warehouse. And I remember I got a Navy Federal Credit Union. I quit my job. Everybody at the hospital was laughing at me like, oh, you'll never make it. Don't let your license expire. Blah, blah, blah. No, they were like, oh, you're going to let your license. I'm like, yeah, I'm letting my license expire. I'm burning my ships at sea.
Yeah.
Because then there's no retreat, you know. I'm not going to have a license to fall back on. Because I was making $75,000-$80,000 a year in X-ray technology. And back then, 20 years ago, that's good money.
Yeah.
And wifey was making about over 100 grand at that point. So and she was 28, I was 30. So I let the license expire, and I got a Navy Federal Credit Union home improvement loan, $30,000. And Casey, what's 30 grand to start a business? And with a showroom, a warehouse, first and last product, 30 G's.
Yeah. Well, you got to give some people free pillows to get to start negotiating a lease payment. Yeah. Apparently. Some inventory on credit.
Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. I ran out of that in like 60 days.
Sure.
I was going to say 6 days. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, cause
that's not a lot. Yeah.
No, God, no. So
I started mine on 20.
Did you really?
Yeah, 20 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, took a $20,000 loan, and I told my mom I'd pay her back in 3 months, or I'd owe her 40.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I was like, this is a bet. She was she's like, take a year, take your time, honey.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
But you put pressure on yourself.
Put pressure on myself. Yes, yeah,
I like that.
So
I ran out of it in about 30 to 60 days. I got a line of credit to keep the business going, and then my wife. So we're coming now into we had furniture and mattresses, right? We had a 3,500 square foot showroom, which included the warehouse. So 1,800 showroom. 1,700 warehouse. So we were selling mattresses and then furniture out of a catalog. And then I did a line of credit. And then here's when everything changed. When we were the first company to ever advertise for a furniture mattress store on Craigslist.
Interesting.
So when the economy tanked in 08, 09, the housing tank, remember the housing?
Sure. Disaster?
Craigslist is the online penny saver.
Correct.
Yeah.
So we were the first ones to actually put like legitimate, really. So my wife learned how to write code on the fly, HTML, which was absurd. Like, I'm like, how did you know when you write code and it shows up beautiful? I'm like, what the hell? So that we went for like when everybody else was dying, 08, 09, we did ridiculous. I mean, 09. So here I'm in a storage unit. We got to about 50 grand a month in 06, 07, which is when we first started opening up. And then 09, we were doing $300,000 to $400,000 a month.
Wow.
From Craigslist. From Craigslist.
Crazy. Were you doing just the same thing, what I'd already learned, which is, hey, here's a cheap mattress. Come see us.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, this time, now we have Beautyrest. Now we have high-end $1,500 mattresses. Now we're having like sectionals that are $2,000. Now we have like a high-end Beautyrest that's like $2,000. So we got to these numbers that were absurd.
Go ahead.
So are you selling the mattresses at this time, or are you talking about like sleep?
Consultation.
Yeah.
Are you consulting on sleep at that point, or do you evolve into that?
Evolution for sure.
Okay. So where do you learn about it, and at what point did you make that transition? And give us some ideas on. I mean, this is three pronged question, but people are going to be dying to know. Like, what are some things that I should be kind of thinking about, or nobody talks about sleep, right? It's really important.
No. It's an afterthought. It's like, oh, I have to have a mattress. That's it. Nobody really thinks of, they don't know the importance of it. So the question that you're asking, I love, because it makes me, it's going to bring me to the point that I like making all the time with fresh entrepreneurs. Cause in the beginning we all chase money. Right. So that's all I cared about in the beginning was making a lot of money. And we had tons of money. I went and got two BMWs. I was like, yeah, money, 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 money. But then all of a sudden, people caught on to Craigslist and that money started going bye-bye, right? Because we were chasing money. We weren't we were still serving others and had a 5-star ranking. We love serving others. That's wholeheartedly, sure. Right? But the whole focus wasn't completely serving others. It was still money. So once that changed, when we realized money comes and goes really, really quickly, is when we refocused our entire business of just serving others and just providing a service, which eventually led into me really wholeheartedly digging into the sleep. So the evolution happened because of kind of necessity, because the money chasing thing doesn't work for too long over time.
Right.
And this is for any entrepreneur out there. You know this. You can't chase money because you're not going to make the long haul. If you're not genuinely what you do here at New Venture, you know wholeheartedly there's nobody providing service at your level. Would you agree with that?
Correct.
Nobody. Nobody cares more about their clients than you. Nobody. You know this. That's what you genuinely have to actually care about is your client and their well-being. So that's when it and the story goes on and on and on. Like we went down like over a million under. We were in bad because the margins. Remember the margins I was taught in the storage unit. I stayed with those margins. You can't do that when you have overhead. And eventually just went, and we were trying to recoup the market.
Was this at a time when the internet, people started buying mattresses on the internet? Or
not yet.
Not yet. Okay. Because then you're going to compete against that. Then
Then we had to compete against the online bed in a box world.
Right.
Yeah. Which happened about 6, 7 years ago is when it first, Casper was the first one. Yeah. That's when that happened. So how do we combat against that? Because now there's 250 online bedding companies that are all saying the same exact thing. We're the best. Oh my God. So going back, so we had furniture and mattresses. We had a huge showroom, 15 employees, distribution center in Miramar. And furniture drove us under because furniture, there were no margins to begin with. And then everything started going wrong with furniture. Well, everything always has gone wrong with furniture where
it just breaking or
yeah, it comes in damaged, defective, delayed. So I had to pay somebody, you know, $25-$30 an hour just to repair furniture every day. So that ate our margins. We went all the way under and we couldn't bankrupt because the name is strong online and brings in a lot of business organically. So we didn't have the luxury of bankrupting the company. So we had to fight our way out, which was not that long ago, like 8-9 years ago. Wow. So that's when we made the transition to got rid of furniture.
Let's talk about that. Cause in this podcast, one of the things that we've seen from a pattern standpoint is people that have had success have all gone through something.
Yeah.
So was this that moment for you in your career?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's talk about
it
that.
Was bad.
And the reason I don't like to bring up bad stuff and dwell on it, but I think it's, we talk about
adversity is important.
Adversity is important in how you're responding. So let's talk through when you first recognize it, what the kind of the impact was in your family, like what are you doing at that point in both your career and personal?
So great question, because it was bad. Like it was so bad. The great thing about my wife and I, we have a dynamic where I run the business and I worry, I have all the business stress on my shoulders and we don't cross pollinate that, so to speak. Like I don't have her worry about the business or even know much about all of the stuff that goes on with business. Makes sense? Because it's such a,
sure,
you know this,
yeah,
cash flow, keeping up with the bills, employees, it's very stressful.
Well, especially in California, by the way.
Yes.
No, but that's good because you want her to be stress-free, helping with the family. Yes. And
she runs the family.
And help manage you.
Manage me,
right.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's a reality, 100%. Right? Like, and that's 100%. Important. And if she's having to take on all the stress of all the things, it's too much.
Yeah.
Okay,
100%. So we've gotten it to where my wife and I run our marriage like a business. And this is something, a good tip for everybody out there. If you want to run a successful marriage, you got to run it like a business. And the number one word in business is what? Communication. Yeah. And same thing in a marriage. Like communicate and define your roles clearly in the beginning and then focus on what you're best at. And that's what my wife and I do. What she's best at, she does. What I'm best at, I do.
Yeah.
And we don't cross. Like I'm not in supermarkets shopping for food. It's been years since I've been in one. It just doesn't happen. Because I conduct business. She loves doing that. She loves it. Loves roaming the aisles. My point is, she does. She's like roaming around. She loves it. Me, I get anxiety in 5 seconds. Like, I can't do this. I don't know where this is. I'm not conducting business. We're losing money. The team's losing. That's what I'm thinking the whole time. Right.
Right. Yeah, we're wired similar in that regard.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't need to be in here.
Similar in all regard, but go ahead.
Yeah. Yeah, I lose my mind. I can't go to Costco. Forget Costco. As much as I love it, because I literally want to buy everything. I'm like, I want that. I need that. I need this. Like, I put it. And I just need to get out of here because I don't need to. Yeah. So anyway, we communicate, we defined our roles early, and we also aligned our aspirations in life. Like, what do we want to do as a couple?
Sure.
And our aspirations are to make a difference, like to literally impact the world as much as possible, but to maximize our potentials as human beings, physically, mental, spiritual, financial, the whole nine yards.
Because the fundamentals of a partnership.
The fundamentals of a business, of a partnership, yeah. And as of a human being, we're all, there's six, you know, key building blocks of success.
Right.
Financial is just one of them. You know, right. Spiritual, go down the list, yeah. Social, you know,
physical.
Mental, physical. Physical yeah. is one of them. You know, yeah. It's important to your health. That's another whole topic as well.
Yeah.
So anyway, what we were getting at is the, what was the question?
The moment in your career.
Okay.
You're the so low.
We got to this point where we just were going down, 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 down. And I was faith. I thought, okay, it's going to come back. We're going to work ourselves out of this. We're going to raise the margins. But we were so far deep at this point that we couldn't come back. And then I realized that this isn't good. So I went out and tried to find a liquidation company to help me liquidate the company. You know, liquidation companies, what sure. they do is they bring in a whole crew of people.
Take a look at everything.
To liquidate everything and run a big liquidation
like
sale.
65% off everything. Thing type of thing just to get whatever cash you can get. And
right. But they also bring in product. So it's a racket, quite frankly.
Yeah.
A liquidation company is a racket.
Wow.
Yeah. And the people they bring in, God bless them, all due respect, they're not the way we do it. The way we ran our sales was our network marketing. Find things that genuinely care about your client and do good by them.
Yeah.
This mentality was just make the sale no matter what it takes. They don't care who it is.
Wow.
And if they need to burn the bridge, that's fine. So when they came in, I was like, no, we can't burn the bridges here because we're going to move on with something else with the name Real Deal. We can't burn these bridges and make sure we have unhappy customers. Yeah. So I had to go through that, bro. It was literally like I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. It was so bad. My wife didn't know how – she knew it was bad because we were like a million under at this point and no way out. And we had to pay – our rent at that point was like $30,000 a month between the showroom and the warehouse, $30,000 a month just in the rent. The electric was like $4,000 a month. You know, these numbers are sounding familiar. But at that point, when you're going down, 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 it was like, whoa, what do we do here?
Well, it's funny. When you run out of cash, you don't have a business.
Yeah, it's like
it will go fast.
You're fixated on faith. Do you distinguish
faith?
Is there a distinction that you make between belief and faith, or do you see those as two of the same things?
I personally see them as very similar things. Since I've become close to Awakened Church the past year and a half,
yeah.
My faith is now at a level that it's never been before, meaning that, okay, God is a thing. Like, God's actually working through me. Now I'm going to let God do his thing through me as that. Now I'm just a vessel. So now it's at a whole nother level. Like, yeah. That's absurd and crazy to me.
Was it through this experience? Is that when?
No, this was
further down.
So faith in general, of faith that it's all going to work out, have faith that things are going to be okay. Have faith, you know, if you do right by others, you know, things are going to work out.
Sure.
Right. And that's the faith that we always had and I always had. So I just kept keeping the faith.
Yeah.
And my mom was been my therapist my whole life. So I would talk to her every day. She was on the East Coast. She's literally my therapist. And so I'd vent. I never vent with my wife or tell her all the negative stuff. I'd tell my mom. So, and that's important for people to listen. You need somebody in your life that you can vent to, that you can get this stuff off your chest. And it shouldn't be shouldn't be your spouse, I don't think.
Yeah.
You need somebody. You need
your mom or a therapist.
Yeah, exactly. If you have a mom that's that good that you can trust, that can be a therapist for sure. Not many are.
Oh.
You know, most moms are in your pity party and, oh my God, you know, they're making it worse.
Yeah.
Let's be frank.
Yeah.
Mine was like, hey, get in there. It's going to work out. Don't worry. You'll be fine. Keep moving forward. Strap up the boots. Yeah. You got to make
keep
it happen.
It moving is
so
important.
Two of the things so far, just to recap, are believing that you're going to get out of it.
Yep.
Two is having a sounding board, somebody who you respect that you can, you have to have a release.
You got to.
Okay. So those are two things that as you're losing $1 million and it's growing by $35,000 per month.
It's crazy.
Right. Yep. And you're wearing all this stress.
Yep.
Trying to live. Yeah, you're just literally just trying to get day by day, right?
With a 2-year-old daughter at this point.
Okay.
And that's significant because the 2-year-old daughter is what actually really completely got me through because I would have to go into the liquidation company. I was having to make the sale. I would do cash deals. I would then take the cash literally to give it to the liquidation company. I'd go in the back office. I would then run across the lawn because Bank of America was all across the lawn from me in Kearny Mesa. I'd pay a vendor directly in their account through Bank of America. We'd then email the company, the supplier, and say, okay, release that couch for this customer. That's how close it was to us completely imploding and losing the Real Deal name and all of our credibility in business.
Yeah.
I was grabbing the cash, bringing it to Bank of America. They'd release a couch.
As you look back on that time, right? So you have those two kind of pillar things. Was there anything else that you're like, wow, that changed my entire career? What were some of the things that you look back on and learned through that process about yourself?
What I learned, and I'll say this about myself, was resiliency, but I want to say this about business. And for those that are, you know, watching this, that are business guys or girls, know this: things happen and the shit hits the fan. And it, like you said, every person that's had massive success or success at all has had massive failures. And that's what I realized at this time, which was the most valuable to me, was I realized that this is actually kind of normal. Like, because then I met my Chaldean, my CPA, who I've had for a while, is the best.
We have the same guy.
You freaking know him, of course.
Wes, yeah. I've been with Wes for 22 years.
I call Wes, my wife was my original savior. I met her 21 years ago. She's my original savior because she got me out of Pacific Beach. I almost didn't make it. That's another whole thing of how bad I really was in Pacific Beach. My original savior. My second savior was Wes Salem. And my third is Jesus Christ. Okay? Wes is one of my saviors.
Wow.
He got me through that ordeal because he said, JD, this is normal. I got you.
So the other thing too, just as you're talking about that, is that relying on other people, having a circle, being able to, because I think as an entrepreneur, you wear a lot, even in your family, you're like, hey, I'll wear it. I'll own it. I'll get myself out of this. But you at some point have to be able to extend it, you know, ask and have a sphere or circle around you that you need help.
Tight nucleus of trusted people.
Yeah. And I think that like at some point, somebody has to take a chance on you and help you and actually try to exit. Cause right at that moment, you can't see opportunity.
No,
you are so in the, you can't see the forest through the trees.
I would define that as grace.
Yeah. Right? I got to tell you, I'll never forget sitting. We were right. Cause his wet office is right across here, across the thing.
Yeah.
I'll never forget sitting in the glass room with him at about three. He brought in his squad. Two other attorneys, you name the type of attorney, CPA, and we masterminded how they were going to get me out of this situation without completely imploding because I was so freaking scared, dude.
Yeah.
I was scared.
You're not making good decisions when you're operating.
I was just surviving. I was just, how am I going to survive? How are we going to get?
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, I think it's a good point is to have a trusted advisor who can look at it, who's smart enough to get you out of it, but is not emotional enough to be tied to it.
Emotionally engaged. Yeah.
And I think that's where like some honest conversation with somebody who can tell you, hey, you've got to make some hard decisions. Here's what it looks like. Here's the roadmap out. Yeah. Because at that point your headspace is what?
Nothing. Like I was imploding, imploding. Like you know, when you have an anxiety feeling in your body, well, that was 24/7. I had this anxiety vibration in my body 24/7.
How long did this last?
That's not good.
How long did that last?
That whole thing lasted about 8 months.
Okay.
8 months.
That's heavy.
Heavy, dude. And Wes was so nonchalant about it. He's like, JD, this is nothing.
That calm in the storm is helpful to you, right?
He goes, JD, you go do what you do best. Sell mattresses and furniture. We'll take care of all this stuff. Just relax. I got you. And I was like, and I remember going to see him like every 3 days in his office, freaking out. And I would drive out of there on the way home. I'd call my mom like, Mom, God, I always feel so damn good when I come out of it. Because he just would make it seem. So the point is this. Surround yourself, as you said, with a team of people, especially in business, that you can go to that handle stuff that you're not good at.
Yeah.
These guys, this is what
they
do.
Okay. Understand that that's okay.
You have to, right? Like, especially when you get to scale.
Yeah.
Right. You have to. And I think what I'm curious is in your next act is how you don't become the business, right? Because if you ever want to move on and you want to transcend the business and, move.
Very good point.
Right. Like that's going to be your biggest challenge in looking at it is that right now you're the name, you're the brand, you're the business. Yeah. But before we get into that, we'd be remiss if we don't ask the sleep doctor, the sleep guru, the real deal. Like walk us through some things with sleep that anyone listening can immediately go and say, hey, do this, think about this, ask yourself this, track this. How do you evaluate sleep, good or bad? What are some things that we should be looking at or doing?
So the number one thing here that everybody has to realize is that the number one most important thing in your life is sleep. It's number one. And the reason why is because sleep indirectly dictates health. And what's the number one thing in our life? Health. Because if you can have all the wealth in the world,
health is wealth.
But if you don't have health, it doesn't matter.
And when you realize that?
is when something bad happens.
Yeah, when you don't have health.
You don't
when
have health.
When you're sick, when you don't feel well,
yeah.
When you have an injury, when you have whatever sickness, high blood pressure, you're on medication. The bottom line is this. Everything's a choice in life. So you can choose to be healthy or you can choose to be unhealthy. It's a choice. So sleep is the number one thing. I'm going to stamp this in. The number one most important thing that you can do to have to be as healthy as possible. The body only repairs itself naturally in a 24-hour period while you sleep. It's the only time the body actually repairs itself. So for guys building physiques, the number one component is rest. Mm-hmm. Most of them don't realize how important rest is because the muscle doesn't grow back bigger until you actually sleep. So you have to
tear and rebuild. Yeah.
You tear it in the gym. You eat the correct nutrients and protein. The muscle then when you sleep and go into deep, because you got two main cycles that you need to maximize during sleep. Deep sleep cycle, which is your physical body, and then the REM cycle, which is your brain, your mind, and your thoughts. Those are the two main cycles. And yes, you want to track your sleep. This is the most people in their 20s, this will go right over their head. But when you get 30s, especially in 40s plus, that's when you really start taking an inventory on how well or you're not sleeping. So sleeping is, and so then the most important purchase you can make in your life is what you're sleeping on. Okay. Sleep's number one most important thing because the third of your life, you have to think about this, the third of your life that you spend sleeping, that's a big number. It dictates the other two thirds of your life. So if the one third of your life you're sleeping or not sleeping is going to dictate how well your life is going on the other end, the other two thirds of your life, period. Sure. It's that simple.
I didn't know today I was going to come in and figure out that I needed a new mattress.
Yeah.
I feel like I need a new mattress right now.
You do.
I'm already in.
I think I know a guy.
Okay. So now that we've determined sleep's being number one and a mattress is the most important component of sleep. Okay. Yep.
So that's what kind of is what I'm up against on my end is the fact that most people coming in, they just think, oh, I just need to get a mattress. I don't want to spend a lot of money.
Right. And does everyone say that?
Everybody, which is absurd.
This is an investment.
So that's what I point out. Listen, you have to think about this or look at this as an investment in your overall health and well-being and an investment that you're going to pay one time up front that's going to pay you an ROI that can't be measured financially, period. It's that simple. Like a guy came in yesterday, super guy from Awaken Church. It was funny. He was sent over by one of my chiropractors. So I have about 20 chiropractors that now send me their clients. So I'm now carving out this niche of being the sleep whisperer that I'm well known as. Yeah. So now all of I turned into private concierge. That's another thing I'll tell about the transition in a little bit here. But now because of my focus on the human being and the human body of how I know physiologically, how ergonomically we're supposed to be sleeping in bed to maximize this process, because ergonomically, we have an S curve in our bodies, so you should not be sleeping flat every single night. Sleeping flat is old school. So my wife and I have had our.
When you say sleeping flat, what does that mean?
So a zero gravity sleep system is the thing that where it's called an adjustable base, which people have heard of. They think of it on TV.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
For old sick people,
like hospital bed,
yeah,
where it moves you up and down.
Correct, where they move up and so it elevates the feet, elevates the head. So you should have at least a little bit of slight elevation on your bed, on the feet and the head, because that improves your blood circulation, improves your oxygen. So you're taking more oxygen when your head's elevated, which most guys past the age of 40 are snoring or most. So my point is when you raise the head, you breathe better. You're taking 10 to 20% more oxygen. When you raise your feet, you improve your blood circulation. Your overall blood circulation comes up. Edema, snoring, apnea, reflux. So I go through all of this so that's why I became known as now in the last probably, if this just happened, the evolution in the last 3 to 5 years of where I'm becoming known as the sleep whisperer, because the reason I got that is because people are, you know, they come to me and they like, I can't sleep. I haven't slept in years. I haven't slept pain-free in 20 years. And then they are after they see me. Wow. So then they're dubbing me, oh, this guy's like the sleep whisperer. Yeah. So people are being sent to me and saying, hey, I heard you're the sleep whisperer. So I'm like, oh, I'm going to run with this.
What's the first thing that you ask? Like, what, tell me about your sleep?
When they come in, like I do a little discovery. First and foremost, I find out who am I working with? I do the opposite of what mattress salespeople do. Because all mattress salespeople are on commission and they're taught to sell down, which is just, I even hate that terminology. Yeah, sell down, take them to the nicest mattress and then sell down. Me, I start in the bottom. Hey, is there a price point or budget in mind here before we get started? Because I can help every. You walk into my store, if you see the value in investing in your health and well-being and you can justify, let's say, a couple bucks a night for the next 10 years, this will be the easiest thing I've ever done in my life is helping you sleep the best you ever have, period. It's that simple. And I tell them that to their face. This will be the easiest thing ever. That said, do you have a budget in mind? Oh, yeah, I don't want to spend over a grand. I don't want to spend over $2,000. So I start there. And I said, okay, well, what are we working with here? What's going on? What kind of ailments? So I get down to ailments. Do you have, oh, I have back pain, lower back pain, my neck, my husband snores, I've got edema, reflux, sure. Go down the list, and I'll even bring up things. And then I get into what's worked well for you in the past or not worked well, like a firmness level. So I just kind of do a little discovery, find out, you know, what they're like. So if people are watching or listening now, bottom line is you need to, when you're waking up, you know if you've slept well. You can sure. You can tell if you've sure. woke up all feel night, it. If you've tossing and turning, you feel it. Yep. And you know when you haven't slept well. And if you're not sleeping well on a regular basis, what I would encourage you doing is to really find out is get either a Fitbit, or I just started using the Oura Ring, which I know you do too.
Yeah.
The Oura Ring's simple. It's right on your ring, right on your finger. Very simple. It tracks every single aspect of your sleep, your REM cycles, your deep sleep cycles, how long you're awake, how much you toss and turn, your heart rate, your volume.
It's addicting. You start competing.
Dude, yeah. I wake up. It's the first thing I do.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
I love it.
I wake up every day and I can't wait to look at the app.
You know what I did is I actually bought all of my ops team one.
And did
I was
you
like,
really?
Yeah. I was like, I think it's that important guys are rested.
Yeah.
And I want you guys, the only way you can know is if you're truly yes. tracking it.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's like anything in business. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it.
Correct.
And so we look at trying to measure and manage a lot of different things. We call them KPIs in our business, key performance indicators. What are the activities and from a personal standpoint, sleep is the one as a guy. It used to be like water in football.
It's weakness. Yeah.
It's been treated as a weakness. Absolutely. And I know when I was younger in my 20s, I was like, I can operate off of 3 hours of sleep so I can maximize my time at work. Or it's not like, and now that I'm not in my 20s, look back and you're like, God, that was unnecessary, right? Like that's just machismo of being a guy and thinking, oh, I can do this off of no sleep. Sleeping was considered weak.
Right.
Right. Like it was like hydration was considered weak in football.
Yeah.
So do you still see that, or is that gone?
Well, it's funny because it's still there. You know, young entrepreneurs, we were both there, bro. In my 20s, it was a badge of honor to only sleep. I only average 3 hours a night.
Right.
I don't even need sleep. I'll sleep when I'm dead.
Right. I feel like the narrative's changed a bit.
I don't know about that.
Attempt. I don't think it's
I think there might be an attempt. I think the awareness is because of all the online, the one good thing that the online betting companies have done is they've raised awareness.
Yeah.
That people need a mattress. People need good sleep.
Yeah.
The more it's out there, the more awareness.
Yeah, sure.
But I don't know if that's really changing. I don't.
Interesting.
It's a good question because we'd have to kind of dive into that.
Yeah.
But I do know now in retrospect that was absurd and I took years off my life potentially.
Is there any data or anything that you cite from like the darkness of the room, the temperature, is there anything like ancillary
there's a million different ancillary things that you should and could and should be doing.
Okay.
Number one is complete darkness. Number two is what, and even I don't adhere to this, is staying off the blue light, your phone.
Yeah. For how long before
you
sleep?
At least an hour before you sleep.
Okay.
At least. It shouldn't even be near you because you have the RF waves that are coming off of it. I've got guys that I interact with that even shut down their Wi-Fi at night because all those things are going through. It's a vibration that puts in your body. You've got magnets that you can lie on. I'm looking into this one right now is where you can go. It connects you to the earth. So it's basically magnetism. Everything's about magnetism. So when we're walking around, we're all walking around in rubber soles. You should be doing earthing like every single day where you go barefoot and walk around on the ground. This is a thing. And if you do this, by the way, you'll feel yourself become less stressed within 10 minutes.
I was just in Hawaii and I saw, I would say 25% of the people are without shoes.
Yeah.
And
this
is a real hike. I mean, I was dying.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm watching like 70-year-olds without shoes on, and I'm looking at them going, what the fuck are you doing, dude?
Yeah.
And I asked after I saw like 40 of them, I'm like, hey, what's the deal? Yeah. And he was talking about what you're doing. He's like, it is a different experience. Like,
correct.
It's like people think meditating is sitting and you're quiet. There's a lot of forms of meditation. Yeah. People are like, hey, this type of hiking where you're in bare feet, when you're barefooted, is a form of meditation where I become part of the land. And so you called it earthing. I've never heard that before.
Earthing. Okay. Earthing, or what's the other word? If you're earthing and, Or earthing's the one that I've heard.
Okay.
Where you go barefoot.
Is it the role of nature? Is there
the earth has a magnetic, being pulled away from it.
Wow.
So the closer you are to the magnetic, pull, is it pull? I can't remember. I'm drawing a blank now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we get it. Yeah.
So we're all meant to. Yeah.
So are you saying we should all be going barefoot more often?
Yes.
Yeah.
100%. I don't do it enough either because I'm always so busy. I'm always going here. I'm going there. All you got to do is walk out on your back patio, your back lawn. It's ideal if you're on actual earth, but concrete will do it. And Rachel's nodding here. Do you do this? My boyfriend always does it. Yeah. So it's a thing. And let me tell you, it's for real. Cause every single time I do it, I take my shoes off, go barefoot. I walk in the backyard. I feel less stressed within 5 to 10 minutes. It's a thing. So that's one thing. You can actually put the magnets in your bed.
Oh, interesting.
And so what happens is you have a magnet in your bed. And then there's a grounding line that goes into the, I can't remember where the ground, I haven't done this yet, but I want to do it.
Yeah.
Cause I think about heat. So I'm a heat guy and I don't want to heat up too much. That's another thing is the temperature in your room. Ideal sleeping temperature is between 64 and 69 degrees in your room. That's the ideal perfect sleeping temperature, 64 to 69.
Okay.
The surface temperature of your mattress, 90 to 91 degrees is the.
There's sheets now, right? That you can cool. And should it be cool?
The good question. So the most important layer, because everybody wants all these mattresses are being advertised as cooling technology and breeze this and freezing that, and which is cool, literally, but but it doesn't really actually matter if the sheets that you're lying on aren't natural breathable fibers. So the most important layer on your bed, listen to this one, folks, is the actual sheets that your body touches, because the human body when it goes into repair mode, it automatically heats up because your metabolism speeds up while you sleep, because that's what's repairing your body and then it automatically heats up and pushes toxins out of your body through sweat, because that's why you sweat at night. Everybody sweats to a degree, some more than others. The more athletic you are, the more cardio, the more your body is in tune, the more you sweat, by the way. So if you're sweating, that's actually your body's pretty in tune with itself. Okay. So what was I getting at? So it's the bottom line is it's going to happen. So you want to be on a material to where that heat's going to be pulled away as fast as possible from your body. So you want to be on a natural set of sheets, which are either bamboo or Tencel. Tencel's in baby wipes. It's stronger than steel, softer than silk fabric. So
softer than silk.
That's correct. Say it again.
See, you can start training sales guys.
Yeah. Anybody can do it.
Even village idiots can learn, huh? Anybody.
So the bottom line is you want to be on a set of sheets that are natural fibers and breathable. And then you want to have a mattress protector that's also breathable, which is Tencel fabric mattress protector. Then if you have the cooling technology in the mattress, then the mattress can do its thing and pull that heat away from your body as quickly as possible, because you want to stay cool. The body, you sleep deeper when your body's cool. And so therefore, there's your kind of down the list here, because a lot of people think just the mattress. No, it's the sheets. A lot of people say, I'm sweating all the time, but my mattress is supposedly cooling. Well, what sheets are you? And they'll say, I'm on a high thread count cotton, because high thread count cotton is super, super soft, right?
Yeah.
But it doesn't breathe. So you're going to be sweat hog on that thing.
Right.
So that's one thing. And something else sparked my mind as far as sleep. Alcohol. The worst thing, because
it's inflammatory. Is that why?
No, it's a toxin. So alcohol is toxic. So what happens is, because I'm finding out so many people now drink, like they'll say, I have one, to help me sleep. People tell me that all the time. Yeah, I have one cocktail night, one scotch, a couple of beers that helps me get to sleep. And I'm like, you think maybe it is, but this is where you want to track your sleep. So, and I always, it's funny because every Saturday night, my worst sleep of the week is Saturday night, because I eat really well during the week. And then Saturday night, my wife and I do a nice dinner, rich foods, bottle of wine together. Yeah. So, and Saturday night's always my worst sleep because I have alcohol and the rich foods and all the stuff.
What about cannabis? What's your stance on cannabis and sleep?
Cannabis is also one that gets your heart rate up. Uh-huh. So it actually isn't a good thing. And a lot of people think the indica strain, because indica is the one,
they say it makes you sleep. Yeah.
Because that's the one that kind of is supposed to bring you down. Yeah. But and I've studied this recently with friends of mine, that it's actually not conducive to deep sleep, because it's actually getting your heart to race a little bit.
Yeah.
It's actually bringing your heart rate up a little bit. So
how about melatonin, which is a natural
CBD? is I'm a big proponent.
That's non-psychoactive.
As long as there's no THC in it, it's got
to
be.
They've said, though, that I do CBD daily, and it's a 30 to 1, because that one that one ratio helps the body absorb it. So you don't feel anything. Like, I do it before work just because I remember it easier that way, but I don't feel anything. Yeah. Yeah. But it's anti-inflammatory, which does translate to better sleep.
Right. And it's a calming thing. And it's also a calming thing. And I'm a believer in it.
Okay.
But I brought this, the melatonin thing up to someone this past 2 weeks ago at dinner, the melatonin thing. And melatonin, this is coming from a person that's really studying this stuff about the human body and what we're putting in it. Yeah. No good. Like, over time.
Is it forcing your body to not know how to do it?
Your body, we already have it in the body. So as long as you're doing all this other stuff, like keeping the room dark, staying off the blue light, you know, you're going to produce your own melatonin when your body gets tired.
Do you do blood work fairly regularly?
Every 90 days I do full blood panel.
Full blood panel. Yeah. I used to be once a year. Now I'm doing that every 90 days because I'm adjusting some of the hormones in the balance. Because that also translates to sleep, right?
I was just going to get to that.
Okay. So, sorry.
No.
If you're hiring, I would love to maybe go onto the real deal sales platform here.
You sure?
No, sorry. I'm retired.
We'll put one in the back. We'll put it next to the golf simulator. So, and it's funny because I'm now referring people to my wellness clinic. My friends own a wellness clinic, Catalyst Wellness, where they do all this. They do all the hormone regulation, hormone optimization, and blood panels every 90 days. So everywhere I go now, like this weekend, I texted them on Monday with four different referrals just because I went out Saturday night with, you know, and ran into some guys that were like, whoa, dude, what are you doing here? I said, well, I optimized my whole body and do blood work every 90 days. So, hormones. As we're aging here, hormones are literally everything. Yeah. Everything. Because if your hormones are out of whack, your body's out of whack, you're not going to sleep right, you're not going to operate right, you're not going to think right.
Yeah.
Hormones are everything. That's a whole nother separate segment.
But, I mean, the bottom line is if you're tracking it regularly, talking to somebody who understands how the hormone balance and the normal levels, and not only, I always tell my doctor, because you almost have to train your doctor a bit. You have to tell him, look, I don't want normal levels. I want optimal levels for how I want my life to be, right? Which is high energy, high intensity.
Yeah.
All the time.
Well, that's a normal doctor. Like a normal.
Right. Yeah.
Because they won't even do.
For baseline.
So if you're looking.
Exactly. The median, right?
Yeah. So, and if you're listening, it's important that you go to a clinic that's more of holistic, more actual, does this. Because your normal doctor, if you even say, hey, I want to get my hormones checked, they're going to look and say, oh yeah, you're in the normal range.
Yeah.
And the normal range is basically not good. It's like sedentary. It's, you know, you're functioning at a lower, you know, human being here. So the wellness clinic, they're going to say, JD, here you are here, you know, picture where you're going to be when you're optimal in this range right here. Well, that's where we're going to get you. And then you got all the different things that go, like the estrogen blockers, you got testosterone, you got DHEA, all the things that go, you know, then they know exactly all your vitamins, your triglycerides, your cholesterol, all of it plays a part.
And anyone can do it. That's and so few people are doing it. They're actually checking and tracking and making adjustments. And part of it is when you're tracking stuff, but nobody does this stuff.
Nobody.
And it's really inexpensive, and it's a way to live a much more fulfilling life.
It's you know, our Western medicine, bro, let's be frank. It's based on masking.
Reactionary.
Yeah, it's reactionary. Yeah. It's based on just masking a disease, not actually curing it.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely.
All due respect. And it's about, if you want to live a healthy life, because health is number one, as we've said, if you want to live a healthy life, you got to do the blood panel. You got to get on the more of the natural side of the way it's done, not the Western stuff, because they're just there to mask. And actually, quite frankly, our society and
it's driven by pharmaceuticals and business.
Exactly. That's what drives our whole society is pharmaceuticals, big pharma. They make a lot of money off us being sick.
That's right.
And I can go on that tangent for a while because it bothers me a lot.
Yeah.
And they're making – so, you know, being healthy is a choice, and you can be healthy. And if you go to a wellness clinic, it's going to get you on the right start.
Yeah, that's awesome. So we've spent a lot of time with you. Before we let you go, can you walk us through some of the things that you've done from a social media and marketing perspective? Because you've taken an old business and been – basically, I mean, attacked by the internet age and selling online and stuff like that. So you've had to create two different things that I know. One is this kind of exclusive event, which is buying a mattress at your store. And then two is you've created a brand, both for yourself, your company, and the podcast. Can you talk about those two things before we let you get out of here?
So remember I told you you're going to have to cut this.
I didn't believe you. We could go on forever.
Oh, wait, hey, you told us you had a timeline. So we're trying to respect your time over.
I'm good. Yeah, okay. Like I said, if you want to keep flowing, I'll flow. But so with social media, you know, cause a lot of people look at social media as kind of like a, like I, cause I run into circles like at, with our baseball parties and softball parties. I'm like, oh, I'm not on social media. And I get it. You know, it's not good. Like, cause a lot of people are just scrolling, but if you're like wanting to build a brand or a business in any or at any point, and I'm teaching my daughter this. She's 11 years old, and I'm teaching her how to create her own brand.
Yeah,
and she's done that already. Like, she set up a TikTok account, Nails by Jack. So she started, Daddy, I'm going to start a nails account. I'm like, okay, what are you going to do? I'm going to do nails. I'm like, all right, because she loves doing nails. She's very artistic. And my point is that she started this nail thing, and she jumped to like, she's at 27,000 followers in like 4 weeks. And she's getting like over, she has a million likes on her thing. So I'm teaching her, here's what a brand is about, is what's her, my daughter's name's Jacqueline. So what's Jacqueline's brand? What's our family brand? So I always tell people that to start there, start on what your actual brand yourself, what kind of brand do you want to be known as? And I want to be known as the generous guy, the passionate guy, the loving guy, the guy that people want to be around. I want to build that brand of who I actually am. And then eventually that kind of translate into your business. Whatever your business is, you can translate whatever your personal brand is into your business brand.
Sure.
And that's kind of the
that's fascinating. That's great.
That's the mentality that my wife and I have taken to our business automatically over time. When remember, I was fighting Instagram years ago. So I was like, I don't need this. This is, I don't need two platforms. This is ridiculous. I'm on Facebook already, blah, blah, blah. But this day and age, if you're in business and you're not on social media, you're completely missing out, because what's the number one form of marketing? Number one, word of mouth. Word of mouth is the best form of marketing that you can ever, right? Because I'm assuming most of your business is word of mouth. Yeah, Casey?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, word of mouth is number, of mouth is the holy grail of business.
Right.
But, and so social media, what you have to think about and realize here is social media is word of mouth on steroids. Yeah. They're handing us potentially millions of clients for free. So now it's just a matter of you getting a message and a brand out there to these people saying, oh, okay, I didn't know this guy or this business or this family was even here. So social media, they're handing it to us on a silver platter of here's potentially millions of more clients for you. What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
So then it's just about creating a brand of who you are as a family, as a person. Yeah. Are you known as the person? Like everywhere we go, we make sure we take care of everybody, like at restaurants, valets. I always tell people everywhere you go, you overly tip people, anybody that does anything for you. And I'm going off on a tangent here, but you want to overly tip, because let me tell you, they're going to people remember generous people.
Get the mattress for the gal at the front. You get the dollar storage unit. You know, that's the
provide value. Like you said, coming full circle. I think one of the things I learned today was provide value.
But take care of people. I think is an important one. Yeah. Take interest, take care of people. There's a lot to glean from
provide
this.
Provide value. Yeah. Yep. Be generous. Generosity, honor, respect. But generosity is the number one that I've ever seen. You know, be generous everywhere you go, because people remember you. And I remember we go to Javier's a lot. It's one of our favorite restaurants.
Great place.
So for an entire year, what I do is I completely over tip everybody, and I leave my card. But I don't say, hey, I'm a mattress guy, you're going to come to me. I just very subtly leave a really fat tip and then my card that says JD the Sleep Whisperer, this, that, and the other. That's it. And they say, hey, oh, wow. Yeah, I actually think I need, or when I need one, I'll come to you. So this kid comes in recently, and this is kind of an example for everybody's watching here. I'm going to use an example that over time, branding, that's a branding play, right? Because he sees my card. I said, well, how'd you hear about it? I didn't even know where he came from. He said, I have like 10 of your cards because you've been leaving for me for a year and a half at Javier's. I'm like, oh my God, Javier's, because he was wearing a freaking mask. I didn't even recognize him. Anyway, the point is this. He spent like $9,000 on a sleep system, and him and his wife are sleeping the best they ever have. And the point is that's branding of a year and a half.
You know what my favorite point is there too, that we've touched on in this context of society? You've left a tangible object.
Yeah.
Touch.
Yeah.
Touch.
Yep. And on that note, if you have cards, because you know cards are ridiculous, right? We get a business card, we funnel it away. So therefore, you want to make sure the card's memorable. And my card is so thick that when people grab it, they think there's two cards. And that immediately puts something in their mind, like, oh, they will not forget that card. Does it make sense? Just a tiny little thing that I've done that's been resonated with people thinking, wow, this is, you know, leave an impression. you know, something that's going to be recognizable. So anyway, going back to the brand is just on social media is you have to look at social media in a way of getting your brand out there. Is your brand good for society? Is your brand good? Do you want to inspire others? My main mission every day I wake up is to impact the world in a positive way. Sure. And as much as I possibly can, do I go to sleep that night, make a difference in people's lives, period. That's it. That drives me more than anything. My calling in life is to make a difference. So then from the second I wake up, I broadcast my life of what I'm doing during that day to inspire others with going to work, going to here. Like tonight, I'm going to, I volunteer Tuesday night for 5-6 hours at my church for 5-6 hours after I'm at my shop. A podcast in the morning. So they see all this. My point is showing a brand to tie it in with your business brand of who you are.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. Yep. Well, congratulations on all your success. Thank you for being anything that you can take away or give us that you learned from being on the other side of this, because you do have a podcast. So before
how was it being in the other chair?
Yeah.
By the way, it's realdealtalk.com. It's pretty cool. It's, you know, weird because as I said, before we started, I can go on forever because I've got a ridiculous backstory that could go on for days. So, I don't know. You guys,
we scratched the surface a little bit.
I'm hoping that that I gave some value. Today.
Absolutely. I think there are a lot of tenets that we shared today that're really important. Again, and just moving back on it. I mean, just contributing and adding value to people, the touch, rapport, taking genuine interest. I mean, there's a lot of things we can, using your term, glean from this podcast, but I just wanted to get the opportunity to thank you for taking the time to be with us. I think it's a great time to just kind of visit here and come to a closure. And I, Jay, this is what I have to do as a host. Yeah. And it's something you probably have to do all the time. Audience, listen, thank you. Thank you for watching. I want you to be able to DM us. We're on every platform. I don't know if you knew this. We have YouTube, we have Apple Music. I mean, it's everything, right? Yep. But please take a look at this. And if you have questions, we love answering offline too. I just want to absolutely thank you for being here. And I think that pretty much wraps it up.
Yeah, JD, thanks for being on. That was great.
Guys, it's my pleasure, and I'll leave you with this. Just remember, for those of you every day when you're moving and you're striving and you're trying to get to the next level, just remember that someday, you know, put it in perspective when you wake up every morning. Someday you're not going to be here. Remember that.
Yeah.
And let that drive you. Let that drive you to do something like memorable while you're here.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Absolutely.
That's a great way to end it. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. Yeah, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. It's been an honor.
Awesome.
Awesome.
Love it.